Lots of things are better together. Hockey, food, golf. How about a cold one on the patio during a nice spring day? But if you really want to take things to the next level, drink some Labatt Blue Lights with your friends and live life to the power of we. Always enjoy responsibly. Beer, Labatt USA, Buffalo, New York.
You're listening to DraftKings Network.
This is the GM Shuffle.
This is the NFL's version of Watergate. There's been some crimes committed, and now the cover-up begins. Everybody has a job to do, and everybody wants to put their spin on what was going on draft day. And so the spin, the Watergate element, now becomes part of the cover-up to explain behaviors.
You're listening to the GM Shuffle with Michael Lombardi, presented by DraftKings and VSiN. Here is Femi Abebefe.
Welcome to another edition of the GM Shuffle with Michael Lombardi, presented by DraftKings and VSiN. I'm your host, Femi Abebefe. As always, make sure to subscribe, rate, and review wherever you get your podcasts. Our producer, Elliot Bowman, with us on the ones and twos as always. And Michael, we're about a week removed from the NFL draft, 6 days to be exact from the first round. And here I thought that, all right, things are going to calm down. You know, we'll stop with the leaked reports and trying to sort of craft narratives. But we're in the thick of now propaganda season here. After lying season for three months, now it's propaganda season. And we're kind of sort of seeing the aftermath of what we saw Thursday night last week in the NFL draft.
This is the NFL's version of Watergate, right? So there's been some crimes committed, and now the cover-up begins, right? And you and I have to be Bob Woodward and Carl Bernstein to really sort through the bullshit and the crap because, you know, I mean, look, everybody has a job to do, and everybody wants to put their spin on what was going on draft day. But I think really when you do an autopsy of draft day, which, look, I think every team should spend 2 weeks after the draft, going through the draft, where you had the players, how the draft. Actually, I think the draft should be filmed in the room, especially when you're 15 picks away, so you can go back and watch it to see what you did, your mannerisms, your behavior, your thought process, your decision-making, all those things that go into the selection. Because really, the draft is a study of behavioral science. It's not a study of football. It's how people behave. And so the spin, the Watergate element, now becomes part of the cover-up to explain behaviors. That's really what it is. Like, it's funny, Femi, I love Rory Sutherland. And if anybody's ever read any of his books, they're tremendous. And he's a behavioral scientist. He works at Ogilvy in London. And he basically, he created a department for himself. He's the behavioral scientist in advertising. He is... David Ogilvy was Madman before Madman. He was Don Draper, right? He was this incredible ad man who believed that you had to sell things through the written word, not through celebrities. And so he created this Ogilvy advertising agency, which is huge all over the world. Mm-hmm. And Rory works for them. And so he also writes a column in a weekly column over in the London paper. And he does a lot of stuff on YouTube where he talks about these things. And he really gets into the behavioral science of the actions of what people do. And I think the draft is the perfect study. In fact, it's so perfect that I asked him, and we're going to do a Zoom call in June, he and I together, to kind of get to know one another. And hopefully I can get him on the GM Shuffle in one of our, when we do leadership and stuff.
Literature,
because it's fascinating. Like I would tape the draft room and send it to Rory and say, or any behavioral scientist, Gary Klein, who's an expert in the field as well. He's written some really good books about what to see, what others miss, to enlighten you on some of the things that perhaps you're just doing it not the right way. You're just doing it the way it's always been done. So this lying, well, I don't want to call it lying season. The cover-up season is fascinating to me because when you review it, there's a lot of lies happening.
Well, let's start reviewing it. And we'll start with Big Blue, the New York Giants, and their general manager, Joe Shane, who I guess, in his mind, reaffirmed that Daniel Jones is QB1 despite all the work that was done throughout this process on quarterbacks, particularly Drake May and some others, and also the visit with Russell Wilson before he signed with the Pittsburgh Steelers. Joe Shane said, yeah, for me, I said it in January after the season. Expectation was Daniel would be our starter, and we brought Drew Lock in to be his backup, and Tommy DeVito has been the backup. Now, Adam Schefter told Pat McAfee on his show that the Giants in the trade-up talks wanted Notre Dame tackle Joe Alt. However, they were trying to trade up to three. Did they feel like they needed to get all the way up to three to get Joe Alt? Because that's not really matching what we all kind of thought how this draft would go.
Well, yeah, so let's break that down. And I'm not saying Adam's lying, and certainly Adam got that from somebody inside the Giants. No, let's go back to the owners' meetings where John Mara said if they fall in love with a quarterback and believe that it's worth the pick at number six or moving up, I certainly would support that, right? Mm-hmm. And so we know that. Let's go back to the first day, the day after Russell Wilson was formally released by the Denver Broncos. What was his first trip to? The New York Giants.
Yep.
Why would he do that? Why would they bring Russell Wilson in and as the backup? You know, are they going to bring him in as the backup? It's kind of an awkward backup, to be honest. And he wasn't going to sign it, but he took the trip. The first trip he took was to New York. Somebody had to tell him that we have a starting job here, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, John Schneider came out after the Drew Lock signing in New York and said that the reason he wanted Drew Lock back, but they promised him a chance to compete. Now, they denied that, and Snyder was kind of hanging out there. All right, so then we have the owners' meetings, and now, okay, so you wanted Alt. No problem. Then why didn't you call the Cardinals? The Cardinals weren't picking Alt. You knew that. The only team picking Alt in front of you potentially were the Chargers. So they could have easily gone to four. Probably wouldn't have cost them as much because Harrison would have been there at six. The Chargers were going to pick an offensive lineman. They were going to pick an offensive lineman. It was the perfect scenario. But they made no offer. I mean, they didn't take that offer. Once May went off the board, you heard nothing from the Giants. They went into full retreat mode. So how is it that if Alt's still on the board and he's your guy and he's your target and you were trying to trade with New England, why wouldn't you try to offer the same package to the Cardinals? I mean, if you're Monty Ossendorf, right, and they offer you a one next, they offer the things that were reported as being offered to the Patriots.
Yep.
And what did the Patriots say? Okay. You don't have to be Sherlock Holmes to put this together. What did the Patriots say? The Patriots said, we got reinforced by the love that the Giants and the Vikings had for Drake May. And that reinforced us to stay where we were and make the pick. Now, are they making that up? Are they making that up? I don't know.
I mean, they don't really have a reason to. Yeah, they don't have a reason to make it up.
They don't have a reason to. They just felt like they were. Okay, let's play devil's advocate. Were the Giants that good of convincing them that they wanted May? Well, their actions certainly would be because they spent a lot of time by Brian Daboll, a lot of time by Joe Shane, working out all the quarterbacks. They went everywhere. They spent a lot of time and money. If you're not in the quarterback market, you still have to do the quarterbacks, but you don't have to go down the road as far as they went. So to me, this is all about we have to restore our confidence in Daniel Jones more than it is we didn't want Drake May.
Yeah, and if anything, I feel like Monty Ossendorf, who we've known, at least in early on in his career as a general manager, is willing to listen and trade. I mean, he was moving up and down the top 10 last year when they moved out, and then all of a sudden they moved back up to get Paris Johnson the tackle. Like he's not going to be – this isn't – you're not calling Mike Brown here, and he's just hanging up the phone. So it doesn't really buy it to me that,
exactly.
We want a Joe Alt. Then just go call Monty if you want Joe Alt, because you knew you had to get ahead of Jim.
Right. And Monty would have been able to, I mean, I don't know what Monty's board looked like, but I have a feeling that Monty would have said, if I get Harrison or Neighbors, I'm probably going to be pretty happy. Mm-hmm. They're probably the two top rated players on my board. I like Harrison over Neighbors, safer, good player, but I still get a good player and I get next year's one, or I get a bunch of other picks that I desperately need. Like, why would you turn that down? I mean, why would you turn that down? It makes no sense, but I don't know if the Giants called, but to me, there was once it was clear that Drake May was going three, everybody else was looking at alternative plans.
Yeah, and the alternative plans for the Giants was to take Malik Neighbors at six and stand pat, despite what the reports said of them looking to go ahead and move up for Joe Alt. Who knows? It's like we said, like maybe they're telling the truth, but when you just look at the actions, I find it hard to believe that they were trying to move up for Joe Alt, the tackle out of Notre Dame.
It's all about – it's like the Warren Commission. I mean, you can spin it any way you want. You can put Oswald on the sixth floor. That's great. But there's so many things that you can't explain that, you know, that goes against the narrative, but yet you can't actually prove it, right? Because there's nobody around or nobody alive or, you know, everything becomes just hearsay, right? You know, and so, you know, Oswald, I'm just a patsy. Why would he say that if he was a revolutionary who wanted to spread communism into America? Wouldn't you stand up and take credit for it? You know, right? And so you got to spin this so Daniel Jones feels like, oh, we love you, Daniel. Mm-hmm. You know, we love you. They saw Daniel Jones at that press conference. He looked like a deer in the headlights. You remember that?
Yeah. I mean, that's... It's kind of how he always looks a little bit, especially when the pass rush is coming after him. I want to spin it to the Atlanta Falcons, who we've talked a lot about the Falcons and their process of team building, but I kind of want to talk about their sort of message post Michael Penix draft pick, because what we've seen now is that we saw the article on Yahoo Sports. Charles Robinson, who does a terrific job at Yahoo Sports, reported that Falcons ownership, meaning Arthur Blank, was aware, was fully on board, signed off on this pick, despite what we all saw in the war room where it looked like, and who knows what they were talking about, but it looked like Terry Fontenot was kind of explaining why they went down the road that they did versus him saying, hey, like, we all were on the same board, we're all on the same page here. It's interesting that this article comes out here, because like, if everyone was on the same page, why do we need to reaffirm that we're all on the same page and go ahead and put this out there to the media?
I never thought that they didn't tell Arthur Blank what they were doing. I think I heard Rick Spielman say the same thing. Anybody who's been in the room, anybody who's had a deal with owners, knows that you have to tell them. You're just not hiding that from an owner. There was never a doubt. When I saw that video, I never thought it was about we're making the pick. Now, in light of what Joe Douglas said, that Atlanta was trying to trade back into the first round to get 10, I think that conversation in the draft room from Super Bowl winning GM Terry Fontenot was more about we can't get 10, they won't trade it to us. Okay, I think that's what that conversation was. I don't think it had anything to do with Michael Penix. Nothing to do at all with Michael Penix. And I think they clearly convinced through Kaiser Sose McKay and Super Bowl winning GM Terry Fontenot, they convinced him, Blank, that this was the right move. Although there's no scenario that you could say this is the right. There's no scenario that looks positive for the Falcons in this decision. So we had you weren't on yesterday, but Stormy and I were on the Lombardi line. We had Jim Nagy from the Senior Bowl on, and I put Jim Nagy on the witness stand. I said, Jim, was Michael Penix at the Senior Bowl? Yes. Did Michael Penix throw the ball at the Senior Bowl? And he said, yes. I said, were the Atlanta Falcons at the Senior Bowl? Yes. See, I think what's really the screwed up thing in this is people are letting the Falcons get away with this idea that it took them in a workout in Seattle to be wowed by Penix's arm. And Nagy said, well, in fairness, Super Bowl winning GM Fontenot wasn't at the Senior Bowl. He was interviewing coaches. But Kyle Smith, his number two guy there, was. So like, okay, but they tape every practice. They tape every drill.
Well, we'll get more into this on the other side. We're going to take a quick break. This is the GM Shuffle. All right, anytime you're on the golf course, you always hear the phrase, hit it long and hit it straight. Well, as somebody who's a novice to the game of golf, a new person, I wanted to make sure I had the best equipment possible. So, as a novice golfer, I went and hit up our friends over at PXG because they have an all-new driver called the Black Ops. I mean, my man Chris over in Henderson has hooked me up with a phenomenal driver that's built to my game. My new game that doesn't really do much of anything on the course, but it has what I need in terms of the club head speed and the kind of grip that I need to go out there and be the best to my ability. I mean, this is music to ears to any golfer, whether you're a novice like myself or if you've been playing the game for decades. The PXG Black Ops driver is a breakthrough in driver technology. It's a complete and total victory in golf club engineering, unlike anything you've ever seen before. Black Ops drivers are adjustable to deliver a combined MOI of 10,000 plus for unreal forgiveness. That's just ridiculously high. So what you got to do, go check out the PXG Black Ops Driver. You'll be as impressed with it as I am. Learn more and get free shipping on all equipment at pxg.com/GMshuffle and use code GMshuffle at checkout. That's pxg.com/GMshuffle. Code GMshuffle for free shipping on all equipment. pxg.com/GMshuffle. Code GMshuffle. Well, as we were heading to break, Michael, you were breaking down how the order of operation here for the Atlanta Falcons will never make sense, despite whatever Michael Penix ends up being on the field, despite what Kirk Cousins ends up being on the field. Like, if they go win the Super Bowl this year, it's still not going to make sense in our minds about what they were doing in the lead up to this draft process. Because, like you mentioned, Jim Nagy told you they were there. Fontenot wasn't there, but at least his right-hand man was there. And Michael Penix was there all week in Mobile throwing in the Senior Bowl practices.
And I'm sure they had, they were going through a staff change, so maybe they didn't have quarterbacks, but I'm sure some of the guys maybe they hired on their offensive staff were. Look, we know Zach Robinson and Raheem Morris at the Rams probably had watched them. They liked them. They drove this. But I think what gets lost a lot into this conversation is the fact that when you look at it, right, you can't – Penix is – if he there's no scenario where it looks good. Say Cousins is a disaster, then it's a $100 million mistake. Mm-hmm. Say Cousins plays 3 years. Now, his contract is really a three-year deal at $135 million. Because once he's on the roster in year 2025, $10 million of the $26 becomes fully guaranteed. That's not a lot. I'm sure they could get out of that, but they would carry a huge debt relief there. So the contract does this. And so what nobody said or talked about is the same scenario was occurring in the Chargers, right? Jim made it very clear. He thinks McCarthy was the best player in the draft. The Washington Commanders said they would have either taken McCarthy or Daniels. They chose Daniels. So he was. Jim never at one instance was entertaining McCarthy and trading Herbert. Because all the money that was due Herbert and all the what they put into him, it's the same scenario. They weren't going to waste a fifth overall pick in the draft to duplicate a position, even though they could have gotten a bonanza. I mean, I heard Adam Schefter on Pat McAfee's show. Adam said, well, they could have got four ones for Herbert. I don't doubt that. I'm not arguing with that. But they had no inclination to do it because part of the job as a Super Bowl winning general manager, Terry Fontenot, is to equate the money to the pick. You put money into the pick. And so let's say 2 years go by and the Falcons don't get to the Super Bowl or don't win. You've wasted 2 years. You wasted 2 years of Penix. Penix needs to play. Or let's say Kirk doesn't play. Well, now you got $100 million in the hole. Like there's no scenario. Like what's the scenario that it works? That the Falcons win a Super Bowl in year two. Well, you're not going to bring them back for year three? You're not bringing him back for year three? If he wins the Super Bowl in year two, you're going to cut your starting quarterback and go with Michael Penix? You don't have the balls to do that. There's no way you would do that. You'd lose the team. So there's no scenario that it works. And because of the contract. And what I keep harping on is the fact that how didn't you know? Like your job is to prepare the team. And I wrote a column about this. Like you have to tie the draft to free agency or free agency to the draft. And what were you doing in February when Raheem came in? What were you doing in October? That's the question that she should be asked. Like, why did it take a workout in Seattle to realize that Michael Penix had a great arm? Femi, you and I knew he had a great arm. Everybody knew. And I'm sitting in Ocean City, fucking New Jersey. I mean, it just smacks at laziness or being unaware. And to use that as a quote, as an excuse, and then to rally that Arthur was behind it. Fuck, you convinced Arthur that Belichick wasn't in your top three. You can convince Arthur that the fucking world's flat, I'm sure. Just give us a couple more weeks.
Have him talk to Kyrie Irving or something. Like, it's just, I don't understand.
I bet you they can convince Arthur. I mean, give me 2 days with Arthur. I'm sure I'll convince him that Lee wasn't on the sixth floor. Give me 2 weeks with Arthur. I'm sure I'll convince him that, you know, that there's aliens from another planet that live in Tacoma, Washington. I mean, I'm sure I can convince him of anything.
Maybe he's always, he keeps an open mind, apparently, Arthur Blank, as the owner of the Atlanta Falcons. But I do think that what's interesting.
Meanwhile, his yacht sails away. His second yacht sails away. He should call his second yacht. You know what he should call his second yacht? The Pennix.
It should be, because that's what they could have gotten that.
He
lost his yacht. $100 million guaranteed. See you later. I don't care how rich you are. That's going to put a dent in your pocket.
The Pennix is sailing away. Yeah.
Yeah, it's already ridiculous. But I thought that it was in the Jets' social media video, though, of them maneuvering with the Minnesota Vikings. Like, that was what was really interesting, is that Atlanta tried to move all the way back into the top 10 after taking Michael Penix. They obviously wanted Leiatu Latu, was the report out there that that's who the Atlanta Falcons wanted. And like, that's, we don't have to beat the dead horse because it is probably dead at this point. But gosh, if they just took Latu at 8, I think everyone's saying, hey, the Atlanta Falcons are ready to go win the division. Let's go forward with Kirk Cousins. But they just, I don't know, maybe they wanted both guys. But it's just like, if you wanted Penix and Latu, why again did you sign Kirk Cousins to the $100 million? It just doesn't make a whole lot of sense. But it just goes to show you what's going on in these draft rooms and what they're trying to do.
Let me also add this to you. And somebody sent me this on Instagram, and we talked about it right after the draft. But, you know, if they're going to have to lose draft picks for the tampering with Kirk Cousins. Like, to get away with it, what they've gotten so far is ridiculous. And Kaiser Sose McKay got away with pumping, you know, crowd noise in there, and they got away with that. They got slapped on the wrist on that. That wasn't that much. I mean, they're going to get – so for me, if I were Super Bowl-winning GM Fontenot talking to Arthur, I can convince you of anything blank – then I would have said, look, let's trade away next year's one. Let's trade away as many, because they're going to take them away from us. They're going to take them away from us.
Yeah.
And so, you know, if they're going to take them away, we might as well trade them for another player this year. So basically we're getting, you know, you traded your one next year. No, we got Latua. We got Latua. We got him. You know, so now the 27 draft or the 26th draft is the one they're going to take away from you. Okay, no big deal. But at least I use that pick. They're going to take they should. They're either going to take away a two. But I think he couldn't go from where he went all the way back into it, and then to take and he could have done it. Look, he could have offered it to 14. Like he didn't have to. Once the Jets turned him down, you know, he was, you know, then he went Penix, because he went Penix first. He could have got to 14 to get the other guy. Offer a trade package, and he kept getting turned down.
Yeah.
Now, see, to me, this is all draft management. If he would have picked Latua at 8, secure that, and then traded away the back end to get to Penix, he would know he had to get to 12 or 11, because he knew the Raiders were going to pick him at 13, unless he was not in the office for the last 3 months.
He was unaware that the Raiders really liked Penix. Maybe. I don't know.
Well, he was unaware that Penix had a good arm, so you can't assume that he's aware of anything.
You really can't. I mean, it's not like he's been in Seattle for 2 years.
Your new wife knows Penix had a great arm. Yeah. I mean, your new wife knows Penix has a great arm. Bella, she snored enough during Saturday afternoons to know that Penix had a great arm.
She snuck in a couple games, but all you needed to see was a couple plays, and he said, oh, that guy can throw the football. Apparently, they had to work him out in Seattle on a windy day
Arm strength, 8. You know, accuracy down the field, 8. Like, you know, come on.
It's very ridiculous here. Michael Penix is a guy that's probably not going to win Offensive Rookie of the Year, because he's probably not going to see the field since Kirk Cousins has that contract, and he's pretty much – the contract tells you he's going to be the starter. We do have the Offensive Rookie of the Year odds, though, at our show sponsor, DraftKings. Caleb Williams is the favorite at 2-1. Marvin Harrison Jr., 6-1. Jaden Daniels, plus 650. J.J. McCarthy, 8-1. Malik Nabers, 9-1. And then you have Drake May, Xavier Worthy, Bo Nix, 16. Roma Dunze, 18. Brock Bowers, 25-1, so on and so forth there. For those who like to dabble in this sort of thing, I guess, where would you go with this Offensive Rookie of the Year? Which rookie has been set up to succeed early on?
Well, I think Marvin Harrison's going to get the ball, and Kyler Murray's going to throw him the ball. Mm-hmm. You know, and I think that number, if you want Caleb Williams, you know, if that number's only going to go down. Because the one thing I know about Bear fans are an incredibly loyal group, and they are incredibly willing to put their money where their mouth is. Mm-hmm. I mean, they were convinced MVP Mitch was going to be MVP. They rallied that number from nowhere. I mean, they moved that number. And I tip my cap to him because it was the most ridiculous bet in the history of betting until we got to Justin Fields when they moved that number on his MVP candidacy. And so you got to really understand that Caleb Williams is a better alternative than any of those other two, and they moved the number on him. So, and you can't take Odunze because who would be throwing the ball to Odunze?
Caleb Williams, yeah.
So that's a scratch. That's a St. Jude's play. Xavier Worthy is an St. Jude's play because, I mean, is he going to really come in and going to dominate the game? No. We know that McCarthy's probably not going to play. That's a St. Jude's play. Malik Nabers, you know, could it be? I mean, he's got great skill. He's a tremendous player. It's a great pick by the Giants. But who's throwing him the football? Are you a little worried about that? I am.
Yep.
You know, I mean, I know that Joe Shane's not. He's got Tommy DeVito, and he's got Drew Locke, and he's got Daniel Jones, so he's not, but I am. I mean, I don't see how Brock Bowers can win it, especially if the Raiders can't protect. So, I think those are the ones. You know, I would go Caleb. I would probably go Jaden Daniels. I would go Bo Nix. That would be my order. Yeah. I would go Malik Nabers 4. I think Bo Nix is going to play. I think Bo Nix props are pretty interesting. 3,000 yards passing. He should get that. I mean, last year, Russell Wilson at 3,500 only played in 15 games.
Yeah. No, I think my advice to anybody who wants to bet this stuff now, which I honestly would say just sort of wait a little bit because there's not a whole lot that's going to change between now and the actual fall time. And also you get to see just in case if guys get hurt or maybe they don't start week one is to take the quarterback with the longest odds. And that quarterback is Bo Nix right now at 16-1. And I think he has a better chance to start week one than J.J. McCarthy or Drake May. So like Nix, even though like I might not
well,
think
we
that
we know May's not start.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, Drake May's not starting, and I don't think J.J. McCarthy's starting either. I think they're going to redshirt both those guys. We know Jaden Daniels is going to start, but we do know Bo Nix is going, unless he gets hurt, he's going to play 17 games because Sean's drafted him to play him. He's old enough, he's experienced enough, he's going to play. Now, if they win 9-10 games and he throws for 25 touchdowns and he has a really good year, I mean, obviously Caleb Williams is priced correctly because he has a chance, and the Bears have a chance to be an improved team.
Yeah. Caleb Williams should be the favorite. That's such a short price, though, at 2-1, but it's hard to argue with it. He's got those receivers around him, and he's the number one overall pick. Those guys get extra attention. He's in the third biggest market in our country in Chicago. They're probably going to get a few primetime games that maybe some of these other guys don't get. If he plays well in those, he can definitely run away with this award as the Offensive Rookie of the Year. I do want to ask you about Defensive Rookie of the Year on the other side. Also, we'll get to some other signings that we've seen this week in the NFL. Travis Kelce has got a new deal. 2 years. We'll talk about it coming up next. And what's going on in Cincinnati? Is everything okay with these Bengals guys asking for trades? We'll discuss it next here on the GM Shuffle. The NBA playoffs are heating up, and so is the action at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NBA. With same-game parlays, live betting, odds boosts, and so much more, don't miss out as the NBA postseason winds down. I mean, the second round of the playoffs have been absolutely phenomenal, and if you really like a team, you can bet on them for the futures market, maybe some conference finals MVPs as the conference finals approach, or how about NBA finals MVP? And if you're new to DraftKings, you gotta check this out. New customers bet $5 to get 150 in bonus bets instantly. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now and use code SHUFFLE. That's code SHUFFLE for new customers to get 150 in bonus bets when you bet just $5 only on DraftKings. The crown is yours. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or in West Virginia, visit www.1800gambler.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369. In Connecticut, help is available. For problem gambling, call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly on behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort in Kansas. 21 plus, age varies by jurisdiction. Void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.com/bball for eligibility and deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources. All right, we talked about some Offensive Rookie of the Year odds in the last segment. Let's turn our attention to the Defensive Rookie of the Year odds, which I think it'd be a really fascinating betting market because we didn't see that many defenders go in the first round. I mean, we saw 14 straight offensive players go, only a handful of defensive guys in this draft. And the favorite is Alabama pass rusher Dallas Turner, who plays for the Minnesota Vikings. He's at 4-1. Leiatu Latu at 7-1 for the Colts. Quinyon Mitchell 10-1. Jared Verse 11-1. Chop Robinson, Terrion Arnold, Byron Murphy at 13-1. Cooper DeJean to the Eagles at 20-1. Then Nate Wiggins 22-1, and Kool-Aid McKinstry at 25-1. My only advice would be bet on somebody who probably went in the first round, because I don't think the voters are that smart, to be quite honest.
Well, I think you got to bet on somebody who's going to get a lot of plays, right?
Yes.
I mean, you got to get somebody who, you know, right next to Dallas Turner. How many plays do you think Dallas Turner will play next year? Latua, I mean, you got to believe both Turner and Latua are going to play over 1,000 plays. Mm-hmm. Mitchell, are they going to let him beat out Bradbury? I think they should. Verse, I think he's a really good pick. He's going to play a lot of plays, assuming he's healthy. Whereas Chop Robinson at 13-1, is he going to play a lot? Is Arnold going to be more of a sub guy? I think you got to really – one of the things you have to do as a personnel guy after a draft, or when you're talking about a draft, is what are the potential number of plays in the current year and what are the potential number of plays in the next year? Because you could be too short-sighted but in just 1 year. Because it does, as Walsh often said, it takes 1 year to teach the player the system. Hmm. But I think ultimately, you know, like Nate Wiggins at 22-1, he'll start at corner. You know, there will be a good defense. Will they win? Yes. Okay, great. You know, Peyton Wilson isn't on this list, but he certainly would be somebody I would look to, because for Pittsburgh, he's a really good pick. You know, he was a first-round talent that got bumped down to the third round because of the knee. I wrote about this on VSiN.com, and this is a position they've wanted to fill. They got Patrick Queen. They're going to be a better team defensively. You know, he could make a huge difference. And Byron Murphy could make a difference for Seattle, too. So I think if you're going to go in this market and you're going to tie your money up for so long, you got to be really, really, really confident that the guy's going to play. Jalen Carter, you knew he was going to play. You thought it was going to happen. Will Anderson, you knew he was going to play. You thought Carter was the better pick. Carter didn't stay in shape. He wasn't as effective in the second half. Will was. Will actually came on stronger in the second half and got him the award. I think that's something you look at. I like Versi at 11-1. I like Mitchell at 10-1, but I'm not sure about I can guarantee that. Latua, if the Colts win and he gets 8 sacks, 9 sacks, and he makes a difference to their team, he'll win it.
Yeah, no, 100%, especially being the first defender taken. Like, he's going to have a lot of attention on him in terms of people that are talking about young defenders. But the point that you bring up, like, these don't pay out until February, Super Bowl week. So keep that in mind, anybody that's betting this stuff. But playtime is a massive, massive deal for this, because I think it was last year, this time last year, one of the sexier defensive rookie of the year bets was Nolan Smith. And I didn't really quite buy it, because I said the Eagles heard about all these pass rushers ahead of him. Let me just wait and see. Because people were excited about him during training camp and everything. But I was like, let's get to the regular season and see how many snaps he plays. Week one, I think he played about 7% of the snaps. And I was like, okay, there's nothing to see here. Like play time is how you win this award, because you get opportunities to rack up some of those stats.
That is the most perfect example of all, right? Because Nolan Smith, when they drafted him, my first reaction was, where is he going to play? He's an old school, back in the day, an old school Sam linebacker, which means he's at the end of the line playing over the tight end. We don't have that position anymore. That position is a dinosaur. It's extinct. Nobody plays an under front with a Sam backer, right? And so now he has to be a nickel rusher all the time. And if he plays over there at nickel, he's too light, and they run the ball at him. And if the corner can't tackle, all of a sudden the weak side run game becomes very dangerous. And so, like, there was never enough plays. He becomes a situational rusher, right? And they had more situational. You taking Riddick off the field to put Nolan Smith on the field? I don't think so, right? You taking Sweat off the field to put Smith on the field? I don't think so. So, to me, when they turned that card in, you know, there you couldn't write down how many plays the guy was going to play. Well, he could beat out. No, he's an undersized guy. And when you watched him against tackles, look, we made this mistake with Bingo. When you can't play with power and you can't pull rush a tackle back, you're screwed, no matter how fast you are up the field. And I think that's the case. And so that's why you have to put down, you know, the number that you think this guy and how the role. See, this is one of the biggest problems with the draft is nobody finishes any sentences. Nobody says we're going to draft Byron Murphy, and he is going to do X, Y, and Z. And we're going to play him like this. No, we're going to draft J.J. McCarthy, and here's our plan for player development starting day one. Here's what we're going to do. See, this is the biggest problem as it relates to the CBA, too, Femi. Yeah. CBA limits you on how much time you have on these players, okay? So if you draft J.J. McCarthy and you got Sam Darnold and you're Kevin O'Connell in Minnesota, who's developing McCarthy? Well, you say, well, Jake McCowan's going to do it. Well, who's going to get Sam ready for the season? Right? You almost need a specialist to do it. You need somebody who's going to have, and then you have to have somebody in an office on a whiteboard like I have in my office. Okay, day one of minicamp, here's what we're teaching them. Day two, day three, day four. And then every day after practice, till the end of we're allowed to be on the field, here's what we're doing. And keep notes of it. And keep detailed notes of where we're developing them. And then every 3 weeks or 2 weeks, or where's the progress report? Do we have to go back to this? Or do we have to, like, there has to be a systematic plan for the player development. For all the players, it just can't be put them out there and let's see what they do. That's not general managing. That's not coaching.
Yeah, and that's oftentimes how you see players who don't maybe work out in one spot. They go to another team, and all of a sudden their career takes off because, like, hey, maybe the team that drafted them didn't really have a plan on how to use them, and this other team actually had a plan because they might have liked them coming out of the draft, just couldn't have a chance to actually select that player. So, yeah, that's our advice for offensive and defensive rookie of the year betting for those who dabble into those markets. Let's talk about some money, though. Travis Kelce, congratulations to him. He gets 2 years tacked on to his existing deal, $34.25 million. Brett Veach says, hey, he looks like he's 28 years old. Kelce, obviously reinvigorated. I've got a couple Super Bowls in the back pocket these last couple of years here as the Kansas City Chiefs have kind of, I guess, reshaped their offense with Rashee Rice. I mean, obviously, we don't have to get into Rashee Rice, what's going on with him, but on the field, he emerged in the second half of the season. Kelce's now there. You sign Hollywood Brown. You draft Xavier Worthy. They've sort of kind of reshaped their pass-catching group here.
I think what Kelce doesn't get enough credit for is being really, really unselfish, because he could make the argument that he's a receiver. He could make the argument that he's a receiver more than Kyle Pitts could make it. He is a number one receiver on any team. I'm not saying he is at his age at 35, but he is a number one receiver when he was in his prime. And he got paid like a tight end. And that's this contract to me by Brett Veach and the Chiefs is a way to say thank you to him. I don't think it's I'm sure Brett feels that way because I have great respect for Brett in terms of what he sees in Kelce now. But the hardest thing for any personnel guy to understand is what a player, an older guy at 35, looks like in April or May or even August ain't going to be what he looks like in December. It's just not. And you get lured into this trap that, okay, he still has it. Yeah, he does, but it's the gas tank's empty. Embiid's fourth quarter. There's nothing there, right? And so the gas tank gets empty. And so you got to be really careful. So what you look at 35, Father Time, other than Tom Brady's undefeated. But Kelce deserves a ton of credit. He deserves the contract. If I would have been the GM of the Chiefs, I would have given it to him. And I would have given it to him under, not said this publicly, but under thank you. Mm-hmm. Like, we're rewarding you for what you've done for our team in terms of not blowing up our cap. Because he could have easily said, I want $30 million a year. Because he's a receiver. He's not truly a tight end. He's a receiver. He's a great receiver. And he impacts the game. He tilts the field, or he did. Now, I don't know if he can do it at 35.
And this is sort of what we talked about last year when Chris Jones was going through his holdout. And you would always bring up the point is, hey, Kelce might just knock on their door and say, hey, what about my money as well? Like I've been doing all this stuff here. I'm a number one receiver. What about me? Come pay me. And he never did that. He was always a good soldier. And, I mean, he's helped them obviously win 3 Super Bowls over the last 5 years. And this is kind of maybe like a thank you to Travis Kelce. It's interesting, though, like when you say that they look better now in April and May than they do maybe in like November, December. I think a big thing that Travis Kelce, he even alluded to this himself down the stretch, was that he needed that week 18 rest when they played the Chargers in that meaningless game, quote unquote, and he rested that game. Like, that kind of got him fresh for the playoff run, to where he had a really good playoff run, catching touchdowns in almost every single game that they had en route to a Super Bowl victory. So, like, those older guys, maybe they kind of have to load manage them a little bit here, especially at the age of 34, which is Travis Kelce is right now.
But once the tank's empty, I learned this. We had Joe Morris in Cleveland. We signed him as a free agent, you know, and he was sensational in training camp. Oh, my God. I was like, how did we get this guy? And by November, he wasn't worth a darn. His legs were gone. And I think you look at the NBA playoffs, right? Look at these older teams. I mean, look at Denver. Yeah. Look at the Lakers. Couldn't win a fourth quarter. They couldn't win a fourth quarter. Look at The Phoenix Suns, you know, they couldn't win a fourth quarter. I mean, they were in the games, and then all of a sudden the Minnesota Timberwolves just blew them out. I think, to me, once you lose your legs as a veteran, you can't get them back. And I think last year Kelsey was, in fact, hurt. He played hurt. I still, even though at the end of the year he was better, I still don't think he was the Kelsey of 30. No. Because he was still getting covered one-on-one. It wasn't like he was, oh, my God, we got to double him again. That never really happened. And this contract, again, I think he deserves every freaking nickel. Because the guy was been underpaid for a long time. He has been to them what Brady was to the Patriots.
Yeah, you talk about the NBA playoffs. I mean, when's the last time you ever saw Karl Anthony Towns guarding Kevin Durant? But he was able to do it because Durant doesn't really quite have the movement skills he had 3, 4, 5 years ago prior to all the injuries. Last thing here, I want to ask you, though, about the Cincinnati Bengals. This is a team that they're getting Joe Burrow back from injury. Expectations once again high in Cincinnati in a tough AFC North division, but they have a couple of disgruntled veterans here in pass rusher Trey Hendrickson, who's the best pass rusher on the team, and then you have T. Higgins, who's in pursuit of another contract, or a new contract, I should say. Should we be concerned about Cincinnati with both of these guys sort of asking for trade requests? Like, I don't know if that's going to happen, but there seems to be a lot going on here with a team that needs these guys to be the Super Bowl contending team that we've known them to become.
Well, T. Higgins has already said he's going to play on the 1 year, and that's all really the Bengals care about. The report that he didn't, that they offered a ridiculous number. The Cincinnati had to know that when they offered him less than $20 million per year, that the kid was going to turn it down. I mean, that's ridiculous the way this money's going to wide receivers. They need him to be a good player for one more year. He's going to go out there and get his money, and then they hope Burton, who they drafted in the third round, could come in and fill that role. Kenny, I don't know. We'll find out. You know, as for Hendrickson, he certainly deserves it, you know, and I think ultimately it's Zach Taylor and Duke Tobin's issue to get to Mike Brown and say, hey, can we extend this guy? Can we make it? Can we get that thing going a little bit? Because they have a really good team, and I think they did a good job in the draft adding pieces to the offensive line. I think they had a really good offseason getting the two safeties, Geno Stone from Baltimore, and then bringing back Von Bell. They signed Sheldon Rankins inside. They drafted the Michigan defensive tackle, which I think will help. I mean, this is a team. Look, this NFC, this AFC North is really good. It's really good. And if the schedulers, when they discuss things with Will Hill, you know, just put an AFC North game on, it'll be great to watch. Because these are really, they're four really good teams. It's going to be fun to watch this. So one thing about Cincinnati, and I've said this on this pod, I've said it for you, you ain't moving Mike Brown. It's an immovable object. And the players and the agents know it. They just try to use the media to create a sensation that won't ever be created.
Yeah, Mike Brown moves at his own pace. And either you can like it or not play. As we saw that happen with Jesse Bates, I believe it was, when he was sitting in the stands at a preseason game, and it's like he ended up coming back because Mike Brown was not going to pay you that money. He ended up getting it in Atlanta, though. So somebody paid him, but it had to wait a little bit longer than normal.
Super Bowl winning GM paid him. Terry Fontenot paid him. He couldn't wait, yeah.
The team
did you watch your Sixers last night, Femi?
I did watch the Sixers. Tyrese Maxey, whew, he is a stud,
I think,
man.
The torch has been passed. I mean, let me ask you a question, and I ask this truly honestly. Mm-hmm. What makes Maxey not as good as – and I've said this to Bill Berman. We were watching the game together. Like, Maxey is Iverson with a jump shot. Now, he doesn't get any calls when he goes to the rim, but, like, what makes Iverson so much better than Maxey? They're both undersized. You know, maybe Iverson was a little bit quicker.
Yeah, I'd say he was quicker.
But the speed is similar, but this kid gets to the rim on everything. Never gets a call. He gets the shit kicked out of him and bounces back up. I mean, I love watching him play. He's a delight. But I think, obviously, the torch has been passed. This, they should build around Maxey, not around a guy who plays out in the perimeter all the time who's 6'4", 7'2". But that's a whole other story. We will go over it. I've gotten research done. I've done research. I've had help with research. We're going to go over every single process decision that's been made by the 76ers. Because you know, and I know, I've always wanted to do a podcast called How I Ruined This. I love the How I Built This podcast. I love that one. How I Destroyed This. Yeah, How I Destroyed This. I mean, we could do 8 parts on Daniel Snyder. You know, we can do 8 parts on Josh Harris and the 76ers.
Yeah.
You know, and I think there's more to learn. I mean, this isn't being sarcastic. There's more to learn from mistakes, right? It's one of the things I think that, how do you become an expert, right? How do you become an expert? Well, experts, most people think you become an expert because you have experience. Not necessarily true, because when you're an expert, when you have experience, the mistakes that have been made keep you from making mistakes and make you very conservative, make you very lack of curiosity. You play it down the middle of the field.
Yep.
Whereas if you're going to be an expert, you have to maintain curiosity and you have to constantly evolve and change. And so to become an expert, the mistakes is what you learn the most from. That's why I think, you know, I want to do this, how I destroyed this podcast, because I think there's more to learn studying, and not from being sarcastic, but from studying how people have ruined franchises.
Yeah, and that's a big thing that I think, like learning from those mistakes and being able to kind of just like figure out, okay, like here's what we should do this time, or let's try to like, you know, color outside the lines a little bit, is where growth comes from. It's not from playing it down the middle of the fairway and trying to lay up or whatever to get another reasonable shot. One thing I will say, Iverson might be the toughest player I think in my NBA watching history. Yeah, yeah. Of like that dude was tough as fucking nails. Right. But Maxey is tough, fearless. Maxey is so, like, the shot.
And tough too.
He is tough. Like the shot that he pulls up from the logo is ridiculous.
Oh my God, it was ridiculous. Big Daddy probably complaining. He would have called timeout. He would have made four substitutions. You know, he went right from the Green Bay draft room right to the sidelines to take over for Tibbs, you know, and coach that team. And he would have maneuvered a couple things around, you know, and then, you know, and then he would have won that game. But I mean, you're up by what, 6 with 20 seconds to go in the game and you lose? That's a hard one.
You got to win.
That's a hard one. But they're a tough-minded team. They'll bounce back.
You think so?
I think, to me, my only point in this is this kid's special. Like, he's like it. And look, I think Iverson, I loved watching Iverson. But I think the lesson to learn from Iverson, when I sat down with Larry Brown, it was one of my fondest moments in life, was to sit across from him at a Barnes & Noble in Charlotte. And as a Sixer fan, I love Larry. And he said to me, look, I decided the only way to win with Allen Iverson was to stop playing 1-on-5, was to not make him the point guard, was to get a legitimate point guard in here and play 5-on-5 and let Iverson kind of dominate and build a team around him that way. See, that's the key component. That lesson that Larry was telling me is the same lesson these 32 teams we all need. I needed it. I made these mistakes too, is how to build the team the right way around your best player.
Yeah.
And where you make a really big mistake is when you build your team around a good player.
Yeah.
Because then that never solved. You're never solving the team building.
Yeah. Now, Tyrese Maxey is 23 years old, just won Most Improved Player a week ago. And, like, yeah, he's unbelievable. And he's 40-something points in an elimination game on the road. That's what you want your best players to do in the postseason.
Carry the team.
Yeah.
He carried the team.
He
played 51 minutes. He never got tired. The other guy, meanwhile, you know, look, I know the other guy's hurt, but to me, my problem with the other guy is his conditioning, his effort, his commitment to excellence. That's my problem.
Yeah. Well, the broadcast was praising him for playing 48 minutes last night heading into overtime, so they got that going for him. You feel good about game
what
six?
What would they have said? Think about this. What would they have said if Josh Hart made the other free throw? What would they have said then?
Nothing.
They're one missed free throw away. From, do you want to blow this up? See how the pendulum swings? This is why it's so important to understand why you win and why you lose.
Yeah. It's like if Josh Hart makes a free throw, if Mitchell Robinson doesn't foul a three-point shooter in Maxey, we're talking about the Knicks going on to the second round and the Sixers, you blow the whole thing up. And now the Sixers can win a home game and force a game seven. They'll be right back at MSG. Thursday, you feeling good before we wrap up?
It's still only round one. Look, I think they're going to have the crowd behind them. I mean, you know, look, I think Embiid played so many minutes, I can't imagine. They got to have to rest him earlier in the game. I don't know if Maxey can duplicate what he did. Thibodeau is very good at adjusting it out. And, you know, it'll be a war. I mean, that's the one thing about when you play the Knicks, it's never going to be easy. It's going to be a war.
Are you going to get to the game, or is Embiid going to be mad at
you?
Well?
It's still only round one. It's still only round one. I think we'll get game seven. I do think we'll go back to New York again. Ooh. I really do.
Game seven at the Garden. I'd sign me up for that. That'd be a hell of a scene out there in MSG with all the comedians sitting courtside.
That rating might actually, no, it won't get as close to the draft.
No, the draft rating had 60 million people throughout the whole weekend. It's just, yeah. We love the NFL. What can we say? That's why we talk football here on this pod. But that does it for us here on this edition of the GM Shuffle. We forgot to tell everybody this is Wednesday that we're recording this, by the way. So if anything crazy happens on Thursday, we're sorry. We'll be back on Monday to recap this whole thing. Michael and I are both going to be out of town traveling this weekend. But for our producer, Elliot Bowman, with us on the ones and twos, thank you to him. Thank you to everyone that listens and watches on the YouTube. We see the comments flowing. Keep subscribing to the YouTube. Keep commenting on the YouTube. That helps us boost up these numbers.
Help put a thank you, a like. I do it all the time. Yeah. I mean, I'm into Trek Trendy. If you ever need any travel information, go to Trek Trendy. It's amazing. I got my guy in this remote town cooking. Hey, I'm hitting that like button on YouTube all the time.
Boom. We need it. Like it out.
Subscribe. Next Monday, I'll put out my five favorite YouTube channels, and a few of them will be JFK ones. Not Gerald Posner.
I was going to say, I was like, is it going to be Posner? Also, next week, we were talking about this before we started recording. We're gonna grade the 2021 draft. Like the draft class grades and all this stuff, the fifth-year options are going to come up. 2021, we're going to grade those drafts. We saw all those quarterbacks. Now they changed teams. Trevor Lawrence is the only one that's there that got his fifth-year option picked up. We'll go ahead and grade it. But that does it for us here. Be safe until then. We'll see you guys on Monday with a new edition of the GM Shuffle. See you later, Michael.
Thank you, Femi.